Boss on the official home of the Canucks.
Dinky Pete comes out of the box and puts the puck into the back of the net.
Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Vic and the Boss. Vic Nizar, Craig McEwen on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650, a rainy Wednesday, almost said Tuesday. Hope your day is going good. You can always get involved, 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Trying to figure out some of these COVID-related texts we're getting into our 650-650 text message inbox. I don't know sometimes, C-Mac. I don't know sometimes.
Well, yeah, we don't have medical degrees, and no. Sometimes, you know, the hard part in all this, listen, sports radio, it can be fun, it can be entertaining, hopefully, informative. It's just such a hard topic to deal with, and you know what? Some of the jokes, you kind of, little gallows hero humor, you kind of laugh a bit, but yeah, it's really something that we can't be, you know, joking about, and when you look at some of that stuff, you're just like, okay, under normal circumstances, and this isn't normal by any stretch, maybe we could go with some of it, but yeah, no, I understand that sometimes you read that stuff, and you're like, how do we even communicate that, or yeah. Or should we, for that matter?
So if you missed it today, the news of the day is the Canucks did release a statement on their situation, saying as of today, 25 individuals have tested positive, and the source infection is confirmed a variant. Full genome sequencing by BC CDC will be required to determine which specific type, and that contact tracing staff attributes the source infection to a single individual obtained in a community setting, which has since been identified to public health as a public exposure location. So that's the situation when it comes to the COVID-related issues for the Vancouver Canucks. We were discussing earlier, though, about the Tanner Pearson signing, and we've been talking about this for, you know, 24 hours now. It's the biggest non-COVID story for the Canucks. And we'll get into it with Dan Murphy in a minute here. But Randeep yesterday, you know, we talked about how do they make this work and all this sort of stuff. Could they buy some guys out? And that's obviously at play here as well. But Randeep kind of dropped a little bit of a nugget on the People's Show, mentioning another player that, hey, is there a way the Canucks could find some financial flexibility if this money got alleviated? Here's Randeep on Jay Beagle.
There's also this idea that potentially some of the injured players, are they going to come back the same way? And from what I'm hearing, we might not see Jay Beagle back for some time. The injury seems to be a little bit more long-term. He's already on LTIR from March 31st, as of March 31st. And I wouldn't be surprised if this stretches beyond this year into next, that you have to wonder at age 35 as well, what this means for him going forward. So in October, he's going to be 36 years of age. Is this a potentially a player, based on what I've heard in most recently, is this a player that, if the injury continues to trend in this direction, is that a player that maybe ends up on LTIR, freeing up some cash for the team? So that is something that just keep an eye on. I wouldn't be surprised if his injury specifically stretches beyond this year into next.
So his contract situation is obviously another year, but it is a signing bonus, and then there's only $1 million remaining. So if this is a scenario where Jay Beagle's like, you know what, I can just step away, and whether it's a permanent retirement or it's LTIR, whatever it is, that's a scenario if that develops, as Randy's suggesting, into next season, and there's some money that gets freed up, and then you can start mapping out the rest of your roster. If the Canucks know something like that, and if they have ideas on what they can do for buyouts, that suddenly changes the picture a little bit.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because we don't know the full picture. We don't necessarily know the injury history of a player. We don't know who they're possibly looking at to buy out. So we get these dribs and drabs. We get a little nugget about Pearson and his camp talking to the Canucks, and everyone blows up Twitter and gets all outraged and talks about, why are you doing this? But there's a backstory to all this that only the Canucks know. And, you know, in the case of Jay Beagle, as you get towards the end, and, you know, obviously has had a really good hockey career and has been a champion and all that sort of stuff. Sometimes that want and desire, the long road to hoe when it comes to injuries and rehab and all that sort of stuff. Maybe at some point you say, yeah, is it really worth it at this age to kind of get a last hurrah? But all these players are competitive. They all play this game for a reason. And, you know, we're going to have to wait and see. But, yeah, very interesting what Randy has to say there, because that could also be an area where the Canucks, so, hey, we're going to have some financial flexibility on this, and possibly that's why we get to the fact that Pearson and the Canucks are talking.
Let's go to one of the best sources of information, Dan Murphy, a presentation of David L. Young of Dexter Realty. And I say source of information in particular to me. So I'm still figuring out this new show, Murph, Bick and the Boss. Do you have any tips of working with the boss or working with C-Mac that I should be aware of?
Oh, man. We worked rather seamlessly together. We always tried to put our work onto the other guy. Like if we were feeling lazy, so you can offer money sometimes, like $5 or $10, we'll do it. It used to be like about $100 to actually host the show. $100, you host the show, but you can offer him money in bribes. I think that will work, but it makes it a little more difficult because then he's not in the actual studio with you. So you'd have to wire him that money and make sure it was accepted before you could actually get out of work.
What I'm most impressed with today is Murph. It's not Thursday, because if this is Thursday, Bick, there's no way he'd be here, because he'd have men's day somewhere playing golf, doing something, and telling Toronto he's efforting something. Like, oh, I'm just working on this thing. Murph and I invented the term effort.
The problem being though with the COVID stuff, that I can't really do that because, you know, they'll be like, we need you to go live at 3:30 or 5:30. That makes it a little more difficult to get from the golf course. So it's, but you're right. Thursdays, usually, especially summertime, for sure, efforting, you know, Jordy Lyle from the Whitecaps or, you know, or from the 86ers at that time. You know, like these are the kind of things, working on features. And that got us through a couple summers, I think.
Hey, Murph, don't forget, I Predator Ridge. So you can do stuff from the golf course as well back in the day.
That's true.
I have so much to learn still. Here I am grinding away. Lo and behold, I didn't know efforting was a thing.
Yeah,
it's not for you, Bick. Not for you. Yeah,
you can't use that as a producer, because then you get fired. Because if you effort for too long and you actually never land anything, then the gig is up.
Dan Murphy joining us here on Bick and the Boss. So Tanner Pearson is the story du jour when it comes outside of the COVID issue for the Vancouver Canucks. Just I guess my question is, does this fit into the 2-year timeline plan we just recently heard from Jim Benning of, you know, their idea of when to contend? Does Tanner Pearson fit into that timeline at all for you?
I'm kind of on the same page as most people. It doesn't make sense on a couple of fronts. First off, I'm not sure why you would commit to money in term on, and I'm not, this is nothing against Tanner Pearson, on a player like Tanner Pearson at this point with a flat cap. First off, because you know there are tons of deals to be had right now in free agency with the current financial situation and the flat cap. I mean, you can find these guys for less money. I don't know who would – first off, we don't know what the deal would be or if it's a smokescreen to try and get some trade value out there. We don't know any of this. But let's say he's taking $3 million a year. Like, who's paying him $3 million a year in the open market for a term? I just don't think it would happen. So I don't think it makes sense, especially if you're saying you're going to be a real competitive team, not this season but next season. Well, he's a year older then. You know, I just don't think it makes sense, the player, to give him term and the money, especially in this day and age where you can find players much cheaper that can give you similar value on the ice.
Are you surprised, Murph, that this has kind of popped up as a conversation ahead of what, you know, lies ahead on probably two very important pieces in Pedersen and Hughes in their contract negotiations?
Yeah. Well, I think that's another thing. I think you really need to know where you stand with those two players. You've got Demko out of the way now, but you want to know what those what the numbers come in, years and dollars with those two guys before you really commit to anything else. And, you know, and what's, I know that Tanner Pearson on this team right now as it's constructed is a top six forward, right? He's a second line guy. I think we all realize that on a good team, he's probably a third line guy. On a really good team, he's maybe a fourth line guy. And so what's been kind of the problem with this team the last couple of years? Bloated contracts in the bottom six and dead money. And I just think that, you know, heck, maybe he gives you a good year next year. He had 18 goals last season. Let's say he gets you 15, 16 to 20, and it's a great season. Like, but then what about the year after and the year after when you're now supposed to be a team competing? He's not a top six guy anymore. And all of a sudden you have another one of those contracts that, you know, for the last couple of years we've been saying has kind of been the Achilles heel of this team.
Dan Murphy joining us here on Bick and the Boss here on Sportsnet 650. You mentioned Demko as well there. I'm just curious because we went through an offseason of, hey, spending is limited. We can only do certain things unless it's an opportunity we can't turn down, like a Nate Schmidt. Between the Demko signing now recently and then this potential deal, is this an indication of, like, Jim Benning's status? Or are the taps turned on again to spend again? You know, mm-hmm. What's your read in the situation of why these moves have come in the past 10 days?
Well, I think for sure one thing is that probably it's a look ahead to having fans back in the building for next season and maybe more of a normal season. I mean, the one thing before the pandemic was this ownership group was not shy to spend money. I mean, that's one thing that's clear. You can have your criticisms of them in many different areas, but spending was never one. Now, spending the right way, that's up to the GM. That hasn't always been the case. So I think that that's probably one indication that they're willing to spend the cap once again. And then, you know, I think the Demko deal is one thing, but I think that's a deal that, you know, whatever GM would make and ownership, that's probably an easy deal to sign off on. But certainly, if a Tanner Pearson deal gets done here, I think that might give you a glimpse into that maybe Benning is still going to be the guy. If this is the kind of deal that the ownership's going to sign off on, the one that Benning wants, then maybe we'll see him in the next season as well. But that's just, you know, pure speculation on my point.
When you look at where this hockey team is, Murph, and you see the cap crunch that they're under, and let's forget about Pearson for a second, but we mentioned the Hughes and Pettersson deal.
Mm-hmm.
How hard do you think that is to get done? Does it make it easier, but they're the same agency, harder? You know, we've heard conversation about bridge deals, which probably have to happen if they want to mm-hmm. stay competitive. Like, what do you see that transpiring and how those conversations will play out over the next few months?
Well, I certainly, in my mind, I think it's got to be bridge deals. And I think that's probably, well, first off, it's something the team is likely going to need. But I think it's probably also something that players are probably going to want, because you'd think that any contract sign, if it's a long-term deal now, the money in the first couple of years, considering the, you know, what's happened with the pandemic, probably the real cash going out the door early is not going to be great. So they're probably not going to be getting the real money until third or fourth year when it ramps up. So if I'm a player like Pettersson or Hughes and that's the case, well, I'd just give me a short-term deal, a bridge deal. I'll take the less money now anyway, the actual cash paid, and then I'll cash in when it's time. So that might be the thinking. I've always kind of find it weird, though, with the same agency. And maybe a conflict of interest is too strong, but if you're an agent for a player, wouldn't you be trying to bleed every last single dollar out of the organization for your guy? But when you have two players of this status trying to get paid at the same time, I just don't know how that can't work against each other. I don't know how they can leverage it together at this point. Maybe they can. Maybe one player is going to earn a little bit more and they can leverage against that player. But it's always just kind of seemed a little bit funny to me that the same agency is repping two players going into such important contracts in their careers.
Just a bit of breaking news here, Murph, on a couple of fronts. One on the Canucks front, Nate Schmidt's the latest player on the COVID list. And also from the Leafs, for precautionary reasons, William Nylander will not play tonight versus Montreal as he has an exposure to a possible positive case. And that game is still slated to move forward as scheduled. Just your impression of what the Canucks are dealing with here. You know, they put out a statement today, and it just feels like, you know, we saw Ian McIntyre report yesterday that next week's games look like they've already been moved.
Mm-hmm.
Just your sense of when games may resume for Vancouver.
Well, I said on Monday, I thought probably 2 weeks from Monday, and I believe that's the 19th in a home game against the Leafs. I'll stick with that. Obviously, nothing's been said, and the league hasn't said in the Canucks, but to me, that seems like the proper timeline. So I'll stick with look for games to resume that week, possibly that Monday, the Leafs game, and that's a home game. But, you know, I mean, how many guys were left? I mean, Schmidt's the latest guy. I mean, what is it, Ben, Miller, Besser? Well, we know Ben had it. So you got Miller and Besser left. Like, geez, and it's amazing to me, too, that... you know, it was last Wednesday when these guys last saw each other. And now we're still getting positive tests, you know, as recent as yesterday. It's crazy, that it's played out this way, but, it's a scary situation. I'm glad the club released a statement, for a little bit of transparency. I think that was important. But man, no matter where, when these games pick up again, I mean, how difficult is it going to be for these players? They had the bye week, so it's going to be close to a month. Will they have had two practices? I don't know, right? So you're hopping back into a game against a team, let's say it happens on Monday, that's pushing for top spot in the division, that's really ramping up, and you haven't played in close to a month. Your fitness is nowhere near where it has to be. Like, it just seems to me like this is going to be a real, real tall test, and not without a whole bunch of logistical problems, not to mention just you know, physical problems and mental problems to try to jump back in and play. I think this is a long road ahead for this organization.
Yeah, and you know, handled greatly so far. We hope for the health and the safety of the players, the fast recovery as best they can. But yeah, crazy times indeed. Murph, before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't get a little bit of Masters talk in. I know how much you enjoy watching golf and following golf. So, you know, how do you handicap the field this year, and what are you looking for at the Masters?
Well, first off, who I cheer for is always the Canadians, and then Rory McIlroy. That's kind of who I cheer for. And of course, there's other guys I wouldn't mind seeing win. And I think Corey Connors, like, even though putting has been his Achilles heel, and you have to putt it well at Augusta, I think he's probably got a chance to finish well just because of how close he hits it, proximity to the hole. So I'll say I like Connors. But if I had to bet real money, probably Justin Thomas or John Rahm. He kind of probably feels like he's playing with house money, just had a baby. We always know that seems to allow players to get freed up. So I'll go Justin Thomas, John Rahm second. And then if I had to pick dark horse, I know his putting, again, we have to putt around Augusta's got to be good. I'll say Tommy Fleetwood. He's been playing well. He's such a good ball striker that would be my dark horse if I was betting.
Have you joined Dan Riccio's Masters pool yet?
I have not. I haven't.
Have you seen it online? And do you intend? No, it's really simple. Apparently, you just like click his tweet, and it takes you to a link, and you just pick eight golfers, and whoever has the best score over the weekend wins. But it's taken some effort on his part, and to be honest, all of our parts to get people to sign up for this.
Yeah, you know what? I probably won't, and that's nothing against Riccio. You can get McEwen after I'm off here to talk about one of our cameramen, Mike Bradley. He's got a Grey Cup pool every year, and he brings in this big board. You fill it out, you have money, and I don't think I've known one person who's won the money, so I'm always a little bit leery.
We will get into that story in just a minute, but I appreciate you giving us some time here, Murph. Enjoy the rest of your day, and enjoy the Masters.
Okay, boys, take care. We'll chat soon.
Thanks, Murph.
It's Dan Murphy on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by David L. Young and Dexter Realty, here, there, everywhere. So what's that story?
Well, So Mike Bradley, been a longtime cameraman. It's
a legend.
Yes, traveled the world, you know, great guy. And so he would always get the Grey Cup pool going. But coincidentally, Mike was always doing renovations at the time. So it was his kitchen, or he was building his fence, or he was fixing up the living room. So this board would come in and everyone would throw money down and we all get our numbers, Grey Cup. And then, yeah, as Murph said, I don't know anyone who won outside of the Bank of Bradley. Like, I think the Bank of Bradley went right in his pocket or into his walls, the drywall that he needed to hang for the kitchen reno, or the fence panels he needed to put up. It was kind of a weird coincidence that he'd always set up that pool and always have some sort of house project on the go, and we would never see who or where or what person won.
Just everything is so crooked, and we lose all faith in each other as his teammates of like, oh, I don't trust you, don't trust you, and here's Riccio just trying to do a free pool to join. There's no money involved. I think he's given away a T-shirt, to be honest, as for the winner, and we're all so skeptical. Actually, I just looked now because I did sign up during the last break. It's actually got a healthy amount of participants now, so shout out to Riccio.
Well, yeah, and Reach did that brilliant read, you know, for his show. He should go on Instagram or one of his social media channels and just kind of ask people to join the golf pool. You know, talk as that golf voice, like he's Jim Nance or something, and you know, and just kind of sell it that way. People would be flocking to that thing, especially if a T-shirt's up for grabs. Oh my goodness, is it a password T-shirt or what is it?
I think it's a Spro T-shirt.
I'm on the Spro show. Yes. Yeah. Remember the Stro show, Stro Mile Swift here? Yeah. Or Low
Eagle,
Mile,
right?
As we call them. Yes. The
pulling down
Grizzlies.
The eagle. Yeah. I've wasted too many tickets watching that that time. We got to go to break here just in a second. We will talk to Dan Riccio to see if we can get better details on this Masters pool. We'll talk to him in just a second. Also, speaking of other 650 employees, Brendan Batchelor is having a tough one as well online. I think of all the people that need games to happen, I think Brendan Batchelor is number one in that. We'll get into that. Plus, a little bit of a Masters update here on Bick and the Boss on the official home of the Canucks Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to Bick and the Boss on Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Bick and the Boss. Bick Mazar, Craig McEwen, Greg Ballack playing the good tunes. Okay, go. I see you working, Greg. You just heard the promo there from Dan Riccio. Once again, clearly in Augusta. You know, we're doing this shows from remote locations. As much as Riccio may say that he's, you know, broadcasting from Mount Pleasant or something, he's clearly on the greens at Augusta because he's trying to be all quiet and proper. And,
I told you so. Yes, he's playing a part. He's doing his David Faraday or you know Nick Faldo down at the green. He wants to bring the listeners into the theater of the mind to get that idea that when you talk real low like this, and he has a right to left putt with 4 feet to, you know, that's what he's trying to do. Reach is a performer.
To me, that speaks to like Riccio's feeling the pressure. Like this isn't some clutch putt with Tiger looming over your shoulder where you gotta like he's clearly feeling the pressure that people aren't signing up for his Masters pool.
Yeah, perhaps, I guess. I mean, but you know, hey, like we can push them to it, but if the people don't want to do it, he's part of the people's show. He knows that the people should have a voice and a say in everything. Like, you know, I think it's important that, you know, the people have a say in what goes on with passwords, for example. I'm surprised that you guys haven't got John Horgan to get a referendum going in the province of British Columbia to try and figure this out, that, you know, should it stay or should it go?
I think he's kind of busy.
Well, you never know. Like, I mean, the people's show needs the people's voice, and what better way to have the whole province vote on it?
Is Riccio there right now, Greg?
I don't know what this slander is all about. Like, does nobody want to have fun around here? It's just a Masters pool. That's all it is. Like, you know, you're going to be watching the Masters anyway. It's not like there's anything else going on around here.
What was going on with the read, though? Are you were you trying to make it seem like you were putting?
Okay, like I was going for the Jim Nance thing, but I was probably 70% commit on it. You know, like I didn't go full commit, and if you don't fully commit, it doesn't come off the right way. So probably should have gone for a few more takes.
Yeah, why don't we do it right now, Reach? Go full commit here. Give us your audition to work the Masters.
It is the eve of the Masters. Hours away from Magnolia Lane, Dustin Johnson looking for another green jacket. Will Bryson DeChambeau not have stomach pains and live up to the hype this year? What about Rory McIlroy? Will he finally win the evasive green jacket this year? We'll continue to preview it on the People's Show from 3 to 7 on Sportsnet 650.
There you go. Now, look, man, I'm jazzed up for 3 o'clock now.
Where was that type of production value for that promo for your show, Reach? Come on. Like, you know, all it takes is who's your producer? Oh, wait a minute. He's working with me right now. That's right. Yes.
I can't do everything around here, okay? The morning show has been talking about this Masters pool. Bick and the Boss, it's been like half the show I've heard today. So, you know, I mean, I'm providing content. That's what I do.
So how many people have signed up for this thing?
We're over 50. There's like multiple pages now going on. The cast of 50s is pretty impressive. I'm you know, we've come a long way from the one person that joined off my first tweet.
Shout out to Jay and Lady Smith, who was the first person to join. How come I can't? So I just signed up. How come I can't see who you have picked?
Because you're not allowed to see who others have picked.
Come on. Until, like, we've already submitted.
No, but until like the golfing actually starts, people can change their teams, and you know, you want to keep it all on the up and up. No, you're not copying other people's teams or, you know, trying to game the system by seeing who everybody else has picked.
All right, so forget your picks, Reach. While we have you on here, we got Murph's thoughts on who's going to do well at the Masters. Let's get you to handicap the field. And if you have a dark horse and you want to hold that for your pool, your secret little club that you're starting here, that's fine. Don't let that out. But, you know, give us a brush strokes, broad overview of what you feel is going to happen this weekend.
Okay. Like the Masters, like one of the reasons the Masters is so great is the leaderboard on Sunday always tends to have like one underdog and a few of the game's biggest players at the time. And I think that's going to happen again. I definitely believe Bryson DeChambeau is going to have a better showing than he did last year. And I don't care what anybody says. I enjoy everything that guy does, you know, like his, the way he's beefed up and he's hitting the ball over 200 miles an hour. Like, I don't know what's going on, the violent swing he's got, but I think it's exciting, and it brings an element to golf that is desperately needed from an entertainment perspective. Rory McIlroy, that would be great. I think he's going to do well this weekend. And dark horse pick is Cameron Smith, who nobody really knows about, but he does well at Augusta.
Sorry, go ahead, C-Mac.
No, I was just going to say, you guys have all ad nauseum heard my Tiger Woods bragging and boasting the office about the Masters. But what I don't know that I've ever shared with you or the people for that matter is I was supposed to go back to the Masters the following year, which is important. Why? Well, Mike Weir won. So here I am. I'm slated. Sportsnet's got me tabbed to do back-to-back Masters, and I get to see Tiger's victory. And Mike Weir winning at Northview, the Greater Vancouver Open, his first PGA Championship, was one of the best sporting events and moments I've ever been a part of. So, you know, I knew Weir was playing well, and I'm looking forward to going. And all of a sudden, right at the last moment, I get a U-turn, and I get sent to Puerto Rico to cover the Montreal Expos with, as the Puerto Ricans called him, Joopy. Yeah, Joopy, you the man, Joopy, you the man. No, it's Yoopy, and I'm in Puerto Rico sitting on a patio watching Mike Weir win the Masters, and I'm like, man, I should have been there. Tiger Woods and Mike Weir, that would have been a career capper. But
Are you complaining about being in Puerto Rico on a patio? What is happening here? Is this the story?
It is his story. I could have been at the Masters, Augusta again, watching Mike Weir get a green jacket and talking him to him in the Butler. All that great stuff I got to do the year before with Tiger. But there I am in Puerto Rico covering the Expos in a series that no one cares about. Although we did get free rum. That was important.
Bic, I'll say that, like, I don't know how much this puts our future jobs in jeopardy, but I believe we've just got the leading candidate for Jabroni of the Day in the last few
right?
minutes.
Right? What is happening? Oh, woe is me. Complaining about the year before, held at gunpoint in a cab at Augusta, and now can't wait to get back there. Meanwhile, on a patio in Puerto Rico. That's a charmed life. Goodness me.
I can't believe they sent me to Puerto Rico to watch the Expos and Yuppie. In the Expos' final year, no less. Unbelievable.
Yes. Yes, yes. All right, okay. It wasn't that bad, but you get my point.
I don't know if you guys know about me, but I have minimal hacking skills. So I've hacked Dan Riccio's picks, and it's Johnson, Thomas, Rahm, Morikawa, DeChambeau, Schauffele, Reed, and Hatton. So he just went, man, he went straight chalk. He went 1-8 on the seeds. And
I haven't actually made my picks yet. That's a lie. Legitimately, I've done more time promoting this Masters pool than I have actually making my picks on the pool. That's for tonight, where I actually break it down. I put my my fancy visor on that I do when I do my taxes and stuff, and I go through
goodness.
The numbers, break out the Excel sheet, who's best tee to green, strokes gained around the greens. I'm going all out, okay? And we'll see what happens.
So, Reach, let me get this straight. You have a whopping 50 people and you're telling me you're doing a good job promoting? Like, I'd stick to the broadcasting, bud, like, because I'm not so sure that your time at promoting anything is going good if we have a whole 50 people involved. Maybe Bix 51 and I'll go on and do 52 for you, but we know Murph is out. He said he wasn't going into it.
I know Eddie Lack's not even joining up. I mean, Elliot Friedman was like, yeah, no thanks. So this isn't going very well, but you know what, you got to start somewhere. Plan, maybe we can get, DeLonghi on board. We'll get some Spro prizes going for the future. This is a long-term play, C-Mac.
All right. Enjoy 20 minutes off before we hear you again at 3:00. Thanks for the Masters update.
All right, fire it up. Let's go.
You know, usually our Masters update is like currently on the leaderboard is Dustin Johnson at 4 under. And
I love the music, though. Yeah, that was great. That was a great touch.
Greg Ballack atoning for what happened earlier this week.
He has stepped up. Yeah, you know what? Greg has really stepped up his game. Oh, he's firing on all cylinders right now.
Who says, okay, because we always have complaints on the postgame show of, hey, Travis Green isn't calling out the guys enough. Here you were on, broadcasting, calling out Greg Ballack, and then immediately the next shift, Greg's right there. Just dominating today.
I'm the kind of player you just need to give him a kick in the butt every once in a while. You know, sometimes you just need to light a fire. And that's what C-Mac does.
Oh, so good. Dan Riccio coming up at 3:00 with the People Show with Randeep and Set. We'll have more details on everything that's happening with the Canucks and a Masters pool update as well. Speaking of things that are going on with the Canucks right now, Darren Dreger reporting the NHL targeting the end of next week for the Vancouver Canucks return to game action. Still a fluid situation. So obviously the 17th is the ideal target date, which kind of goes into what we were talking about with the 19th kind of being there. But it's still, you still need a lot of things to happen prior to then. And things can change really easily. And IMAC reporting yesterday that the two Edmonton games next week have been postponed. So 17th right now, according to early reports right now from Darren Dreger, is the ideal start date. However, you need to go through multiple days with no positive tests. And until you get to that stage, everything gets a bit pushed back.
For sure. And you also have to wonder, like, when would be the first day that they could probably practice or put a few guys on the ice to try and get some of that fitness back, as Murph talked about, which will be so, so difficult in the time that they had off prior to when this occurred and to now. So, yeah, in order to possibly play, not this weekend, the following weekend, you'd have to think practices would have to start midweek, Wednesday or somewhere along those lines. And how all that works of the people who could come out of the protocol and are cleared and who's been called up and those handful or couple now, I guess, players who haven't tested positive, I guess, could continue and work out then. So that is also a big step for the Canucks to get back to play. Not only the health of all the players, but also then once those players are able, when can they start actually putting in the work and going on the ice and getting back into the rink?
Yeah, and I guess that's a fascinating point for me is that, you know, targeting the 17th, is that an indication that they believe that they can play games with a roster or with the guys that are currently on the list, right? I think that's a distinction that's important here is there certain call-ups that can make? Because if you have a if you have a 10-day warning and say, hey, there's a 7-day quarantine for certain guys that you're calling up from the AHL, whether, you know, from Utica, can you still field or ice a 20-man roster and can you play a game? You know, is the NHL looking at this and saying, hey, we just want the games played. We don't care who plays in that scenario, right? I think that's the interesting element of this too. It's, hey, the guys that are tucked away, are you still able to find a way to play?
Yeah, you look at this and go, the integrity of the competition, is that a factor even? Or is it just, hey, we can cobble together enough guys and we could play this game and it'll be a reasonable facsimile on some level. So that's the challenging or difficult thing. And then, you know, for those teams that maybe get the full Canucks squad down the road and the other teams that played and got wins and maybe pushed their playoff totals higher against a slash Utica Comet slash Canucks, there's just so many things that have to be decided and what's the best for the health, what's the best for the business that, yeah, this is something that, you know, years from now we'll look back and analyze and go over and try and figure out, oh, they could have done this or maybe they should have tried that. And ultimately, I'm not sure what the right answer is going to be.
Well, it's like, I know the NHL's protocols have kind of come under fire through all this as well. And it's interesting to look what's happening in Toronto right now because William Nylander was possibly exposed to COVID-19. And, you know, Chris Johnson reporting here, just tweeting out, early word is the incubation period from when Nylander had a possible COVID-19 exposure to when he skated with Leafs teammates this morning isn't believed to have been long enough for him to be considered contagious. So tonight's Toronto-Montreal game can go ahead as a result. And then you factor in what happened here in Vancouver with, you know, the Wednesday morning skate leading into all this, there's a scenario that we're in now. It just kind of makes you think like, hey, you just had a warning. Would you not try to be as cautious as possible in these scenarios? And here's this once again, like, how is the NHL going to, I don't want to say discipline, but like, what is their method here to try to solve this, to solve these issues?
Is there a different system where moving forward they're going to have to make it that tests are in the early morning and no one can go on the ice until they know what the result is? And that's not to say like, but these are kind of popping up either during, after, and I know the protocols are put in place and I know sometimes there can be a false positive or a false negative, but do they have to look at tweaking some things in order for the safety so that these outbreaks, like we've seen with the Canucks, don't happen?
Well, I think more importantly, you have to adjust to the new reality, right? And we talked to PJ on Monday, and I kind of asked the questions like, did this fall into the loophole of, hey, a timing kind of loophole of when got it tested positive and, you know, going through the 24-hour process of the next test and all that sort of stuff, and there they were back on the ice, and did this fall into a loophole? And I think one thing you have to consider here is the element of the variant, right, is you can come up with your protocols based on what the relevant information, based on the science and all that sort of stuff, but if there's a variant here at play, do you have to now get more aggressive in your protocols and try to adjust those to match your new current reality? And if that's something that's maybe not happening from the league standpoint, not the team standpoint, from the league standpoint, and I know there's, you know, local government that their protocols rank over top of the NHL's, but is that something that their baseline needs to be raised up? That to me is a real concern here when it comes to how the NHL is handling this.
Well, and you look at just how the provinces are handling it, Bickley. Ontario now deciding that they may go into full lockdown mode for 4 weeks and only allow people to go out or get to groceries and everything gets shut down. It's this ever-evolving, ever-moving target. And once you think you hit the bullseye, well, the game changes and the landscape is different and you got to try and adapt and change as well with it. So that is the most frustrating and challenging thing in all this is that the health authorities, the teams, everyone, the companies that we work for are doing their best to do what they can with the information they have. But that information is constantly moving and evolving. And one thing you know today is different tomorrow.
So that's the latest report, again, from Darren Dreger. He's reporting that the NHL is targeting the end of next week for the Canucks to return to game action, that being the 17th in that scenario. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on for the next, I guess, 24 hours, 48 hours to see how the situation develops. And it's going to be important for the Vancouver Canucks as far as testing goes to start the process to get back on the ice, to start testing negative, and that players can return to the ice. We'll keep an eye on that. One person I'm sure would be thrilled about games being back on air is Brendan Batchelor. I don't know if you saw this last night, C-Mac.
No, I didn't.
So, you know, I'm sure Batch is a little bit bored without games, right? Although he's got his hands full, I know, with a new kid there. But, you know, it's you log onto the internet and you're just like, hey, I'll just tweet some stuff and all this sort of, you know, you try to fill up the time. So there's this thing going around on Twitter. It's, what are you eliminating? And they post seven different types of foods. It's tacos, fries, beer, burger, soda, pizza, and cake. And you got to eliminate two forever.
Okay.
And Batch, you know, takes this tweet and posts it online. He's like, I'm getting rid of tacos and beer. And boy, I tell you, people were not happy. The the hailstorm of Twitter focused all their efforts on previously arguing about, you know, Tanner Pearson and COVID and all this. And suddenly, Brendan Batchelor at 10:30 last night became the focus of everyone's Twitter. And I think it's because he posted beer. But there's a lot of taco fans. And the replies were pretty great. Some people saying, hey, you went from dad to granddad pretty quick there.
Yeah, can he still have alcohol? Like, if he gets rid of beer, can he have other alcohol?
I suppose, but in the context of these seven items,
yeah,
it feels harsh to get rid of beer.
It does. The taco thing I can kind of guess, although I'm a big taco guy, but the beer thing, there's no way I could do that, I guess, unless they just said you could have, you know, scotch, more scotch, and a little bit more scotch after that. But yeah, that's... I'm a little surprised. You know, Batch has got those English roots, and you know how much the English love a pint and their fish and chips, I guess. But it is interesting. You know, maybe Batch, though, for the baby, decided that, you know, I could give up beer. You know, he wants to set the example for his young daughter that daddy's going to do this for you. But I am a little, I thought he'd pick cake or something like that. What is he going with beer for?
Cake to me is the easiest drop. It's by far the easiest one to get rid of. But I will say, like, as much as I do love beer, I think it just barely makes the cut. But, one of the liquids has to go. Beer or soda has to go. And this argument is like, well, soda's not good for you. It's like, well, you know, if you really want to break it down, the pounds that you're putting on that we've all put on during this pandemic, if you did the tracing of the pounds of where they have come from, I bet a lot of it might be from the beer I've consumed. And I've got to work that off, too, as well. So it's not as if that's fantastic for you either.
Well, yeah, the counting the calories of the beer. But there's some really good... I think, anyways, I've tried a lot of them, being on the keto craze for a long time, low carb beer. And I'm not really talking about the ones that are made by traditional breweries, but Bridge Right. Brewing in North Van has some beer that is very good. And it actually tastes like beer, and it's not even 4%, it's 5%, which is a bonus, but it tastes like a pint does, and there's very few calories, very few, you know, carbs. So you're not really putting on the weight in that case. So Batch, you know, he's got all this extra time, free time. Why doesn't he do some research and take a look around and go, okay, if I'm trying to cut carbs or calories or something, there are beers out there that I can drink, not just light beers that taste good, less filling. I guess that is a light beer from back in the day. And he could consume that and not worry so much about the waistline.
I do love me a good soda, though.
Do you? I've never been I don't know. We used to always joke, Murph and I, as we tell more Murph stories, can of sugar. So you'd go to the vending machine and Murph say, what do you want? I go, oh, get me a can of sugar. Yeah, no, the soda is not really my thing, but I can see the appeal.
I call them red waters because, you know, you trick your mind in saying like, hey, I'm well aware that's not great. It's a can of sugar. But if I convince myself, hey, it's a red water, then it's like, oh, I'm just drinking a red water. It's fine. I'm all good. And I can crush one of those a day. It's fantastic.
Wow. That's a lot of energy and not so good stuff going into your body. Because I do believe if I looked at it one time with the Coke and looking at the,
oh, don't
the
tell
can
me,
of Coke,
don't tell me.
But no, but you look at all the sugar that goes into it. You're like, wow, that amount of sugar is going into my body, and it's no wonder I'm bouncing off the walls after I had it. And especially having kids when they were growing up, the last thing you want to see was the grandparents slipping a can of soda in their hand late towards bedtime, and you're like, I got to live with that. And grandparents go, yes, you do. Yes, you do.
As the uncle, I do that all the time. I'll just like
slide. Oh, nice, like, nice, thanks.
Red it's waters like, for everyone. And I'm like, all right, I've had my fun. I'm out of here.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're that guy. Awesome.
Of course. Awesome. It's, you know, being the uncle is great because it's all the fun with none of the burden.
Well, at the Dunbar Lumber text line here, imagine being concerned about calories and not dumping cake. Like, yeah, why wasn't Batch dumping the cake? That would be the one that would, you know, do the most.
We need to get Batch back in the booth and, you know, really focusing on the stuff that really matters.
For sure we do. For sure we do, yeah.
Vic and the boss, we are done for the day. The People Show coming up. Emily Kaplan's going to join us at 3:30. Also, Patrick Johnson, as he does every Wednesday at 5 o'clock, detailing the Canucks COVID situation, also the Tanner Pearson, and what else could be happening with Jay Beagle. It's all on the way here on the official home of the Canucks. Plus, we'll be talking about Riccio's Masters pool. And hey, golfers, get Great Vancouver Golf for less. Go to discountgolfcard.ca for all the details and to order your Vancouver discount golf card today. The People Show coming up next on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.